Well, good morning and welcome to MVC Conf 2. My name is John Peterson, and today I'm going to be talking to you about MVC, ASP MVC 3, and giving you a brief introduction to the new features in the third release of ASP's MVC framework. Here's my contact information, and should you have any questions regarding today's presentation, please do not hesitate to contact me. A little bit about me. I'm a Philadelphia-based software developer with about 20 years of experience. I'm a Microsoft ASP.NET MVP. I am a ASP insider. I'm also a member of the Lowe's Techies blogging community. I'm one of the newer developers on the Nerd Dinner project, helping the guys take the Nerd Dinner application to MVC 3 and Razor, the Razor View Engine in particular. I'm also a committer on the NDB Unit project with Steve Bolin. NDB Unit is an open source testing framework for databases. And in terms of my passion in software, I guess I could sum it up as better software through patterns and practices. And as we go through some of the new features in MVC, ASP MVC 3, I think you're going to see some really solid patterns come through and some good things to follow in your software development efforts. A little bit of a roadmap on today's presentation. Talk a little bit about ASP MVC, which from here on out I'll just abbreviate as MVC. And we'll talk about MVC in a nutshell, as well as comparing MVC to ASP. And then a lot of the new we'll discuss then the bulk of today's presentation will be the new features in MVC 3.0. Now, when I it's hard to believe that the MVC ASP's version of the MVC pattern is about 4 years old, and the community tech preview came out in December of 2007. Version 1 came out in March of 2009. 2.0 in March of 2010, and then the latest release, 3.0, came out just this last month, January of 2011. And this release is a very significant release. 2.0 had a number of interesting features, specifically areas, which is a better, more flexible way of organizing your controllers. We also got model validation. But 3.0 has a number of major new features, most notably of which is the Razor View Engine, but we also have sessionless controllers, integrated dependency injection resolution, unobtrusive JavaScript and Ajax, remote validation, new helpers, the web grid, email, Twitter, to name a few. And we'll be going over several of those in today's presentation. MVC in a nutshell. Now, for purposes of this presentation, when I say MVC, I mean ASP MVC. However, MVC itself is not a product. It's a pattern. It stands for Model View Controller. And the pattern itself has been around for a little over 30 years. It began on the Smalltalk project at Xerox PARC. It's like other patterns, MVP, which stands for Model View Presenter, or MVVM, Model View View Model, which Model View View Model recently is often linked very closely with WPF and Silverlight. But these are software architectural patterns. They've been around longer than the products that you currently hear about in terms of their implementation. So ASP MVC is but one of several web frameworks out there today that implement the MVC pattern. The most common, most well-known probably, of which is Rails, which is based on the Ruby language, but nevertheless, just like ASP, implements the Model View Controller pattern. In terms of comparing ASP MVC and ASP and contrasting, both are built on the ASP pipeline. That is to say that the integration with with IIS, Internet Information Services, it's all built on ASP. They both use web forms. It's important to note that, and I'm talking about ASPX pages now, not Razor pages, but ASPX pages in MVC, those views, were web forms, but they did not have view state. Consequently, you could not use your favorite Telerik control for to drop onto your view, just like you would do in an ASP web, traditional web form. Traditional, you know, ASP web forms had code behind. MVC doesn't have such a thing. And that really gets at the heart of the difference in the design patterns that are involved between the two implementations of ASP. Under traditional ASP, it's best to say that it conforms to the model view presenter pattern, and the code behind is logic in the presentation layer, which really lends itself to being an implementation of the model view presenter. We have no such code behind in MVC, and that's a big difference architecturally in where you put your code. So in many ways, ASP, MVC, and ASP are not so different, but architecturally there are some key differences. And from a standpoint of testability and from where folks like to be with respect to how they implement a solution on the web framework, there's good choice there. And both are good ways to go, and you have two solid choices with the ASP framework. But it's important to know where they're alike and where they are the same. So if you're looking to upgrade to MVC 3.0, which I would highly recommend that you do, you can easily get to MVC 3.0 today. While there is the new Razor View Engine, your ASPX pages are still going to work, and your ASPX pages can sit side by side your Razor pages should you decide to use the new Razor View Engine. Again, different view engines, they're not going to interfere with one another. The MVC team actually created an upgrade tool that actually works fairly well, and Telerec actually has a utility that will upgrade your views as well. As always, your mileage may vary. No upgrade tool can be guaranteed to be 100% perfect or foolproof, so make sure you back up your project, but you may find that these upgrade tools will work very well for you. If you consult the homepage, you know, ASP.net, you should, and look under the MVC area, you should find some information on the upgrade tool from the MVC team. So what's new? What's new in MVC 3.0? Well, talked about the Razor View Engine, and I won't specifically be talking about the Razor View Engine on its own. Throughout this talk, I will show you where we'll be using the Razor View Engine throughout this talk, and I'll be pointing out to you some of the big features in that aspect of things. Sessionless controllers. Sessionless controllers, as the name would imply, they don't make use of session. And we will talk about that. By default, all controllers in MVC before had session in them, and consequently they were synchronous. We will talk about how sessionless controllers can give us some async behavior in cases where we may want that. Integrated dependency injection resolution. So you still get to use the dependency injection in version control container that you like to use, whether it be structure map or ninject or Unity or Windsor. You still get to use it, but MVC 3.0 provides a way for you to integrate your chosen IOC container in a much more seamless way and get you some real advantages in terms of flexibility in the event that you have to perhaps swap it out. But the big thing is you don't need to create a custom session factory anymore, and that's really nice. And dependency injection, the story for dependency injection in MVC 3 is beyond controllers, which is where predominantly it was in MVC 1 and MVC 2 with custom controller factories. Unobtrusive JavaScript and Ajax. There's remote validation now, so we can much more seamlessly make use of controller actions and methods to validate data, and we can utilize JavaScript and Ajax for that, but in an unobtrusive way, which means that a lot is happening behind the scenes for us. We don't need to really directly deal with a lot of that JavaScript and jQuery code, and that's really where remote validation comes into play. Granular validation I'm really not going to talk about here, but suffice it to say that all this really means is that when you have a model and you're running validation, You can optionally omit validation on certain attributes within your model, whereas before it was an all or nothing proposition. Here, you get a lot more granularity over how you choose to implement your validation. Number of new helpers, the ones that we're going to talk about today are the chart helper and the WebGrid helper. There's also a Twitter helper. Helpers in general, if you've been using MVC, you're familiar with helpers. We use them for building forms. We use them to build text boxes, to build complete editors. A helper is nothing more than a method that gets employed that basically lays in HTML on a view to be rendered to the client. And that itself is a very good architectural practice to follow. And there's a number of new helpers. And there's also a number of SEO improvements that are in MVC 3 that we're going to be talking about today. A lot of new features. We're not going to be able to get to all of them today, but for a complete list, go to ASP.net, learn, white papers, MVC3 release notes. Here's the link. Check it out. There's a lot of good information up there, and take some time to learn about all the new features. But a lot of the good ones and significant ones we're obviously going to be going over today. So let's talk about SEO, search engine optimization, and one of the new features that's in the product, and that is permanent. Talking about this first one, where we have HTTP not found result, which is a 404, and then we have some other types: redirect. We have redirect to action permanent, redirect to route permanent. Now, previously, all redirects resulted in a 302, which is just a temporary redirect. But now we can specify permanent redirects, which results in a response code of 301. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to flip over to Firefox to demonstrate this. I'm going to be using Firebug. And if you're doing this kind of work, you definitely want to be using something like Fiddler or Firebug. Because a lot of what happens in our interactions with a web server happen behind the scenes, and we don't necessarily know. It's not very clear as to what's happening. So from the browser perspective, it all looks the same. So here's what I'm going to do is I'm actually going to go back to our page, our home page here. And our home page, basically this application that I built, begins with the default ASP MVC application template, and I have just layered in a few additional things to demonstrate these new features. So here we are at our homepage, and what I'm going to do is I'm going to bring up Firebug here, and I'm on the net page, so it's going to show the network traffic, and I'm going to click the not found link here. Now notice that the status that comes back, it says not found, 404. That's correct, that's exactly what we want. Let's go back and let's do a temporary redirect here. Now the temporary redirect, and we're going to go over this in a moment, basically within our controller is going to redirect us to this new location page. Notice the 302 status code. Notice all this traffic that comes through. You know, a lot of times when you're looking at MVC and you're making a request to a controller and there's a bunch of logic that's performed and then a view comes back, it seems like it's just a couple things that occur, but when you look at the traffic, look at this, we have a redirection that occurred. We actually have a call to our controller action. We have CSS. We have jQuery. A lot of JavaScript that's going through this. What seemed like a small thing actually ended up in six requests, and that's one thing that you want to be very, very cognizant of is you're not really requesting one thing. There's a lot of requests that are going on here. But in terms of search engine optimization, these statuses are very important. You can see these other ones result in 200s. This is okay. This is like a good request. But 302 means temporary. Now, let's go back and let's do a permanent redirect. And I have a separate link for that. And this is the redirect permanent action in our home controller. And notice the status on this one, 301. The rest of them afterwards are exactly the same. Now, knowing the status that comes back is extremely important, because this is what tells the search engines and the crawlers out there, hey, this has been moved permanently, or this is just a temporary move. And based on whether or not it's a temporary or permanent move, the search engines will operate differently on that. Now, I'm going to run over to the home controller here, and first thing I'm going to do is go to the I'm going to go to the not found method. So here's our not found here. So here's our not found, and you can see that it returns an HTTP not found result. Return new HTTP not found result. So basically what this does is this stuffs into the response a 404. Basically, hey, what you're trying to find is not found. And there may be a variety of instances where you will want to use this. Perhaps somebody is trying to access a resource that they haven't been properly authenticated for, and you want to throw back a 404. This is one way that you can do that. Our redirect temporary. Now, this is a action that we're very familiar with. And we've had this before. And the first parameter is the controller action, and the second parameter is the controller. So the new location home. So we're redirecting to the new location action of the home controller. Look at redirect permanent. Return redirect to action permanent. Same thing. The new location action of the home controller. Both got us to the same place, but in this case, a 302 status was sent out first. In this case, it's the 301. To what you can perceive as a person just looking at this transaction, looking right from the browser, it all looks the same. You know, if I do a permanent here, I'm going to get to the new location. If I go back and I do a temp, I'm going to get to the new location. It doesn't, there's no visible difference between how those two things operate. But if you use something like Firebug and you sniff the network traffic a bit, you're going to see that there in fact is a big difference there. And that's the SEO improvements in MVC 3.0. So if you have a site and you have a bunch of links that are changing in favor of other links, you're going to want to keep those old actions in place. However, instead of doing a redirect, just a straight redirect, and these are permanent changes, you're going to want to use the redirect to permanent action method. Okay, so another feature that is in MVC 3.0 are sessionless controllers. Now, the session object, which is off of the HTTP context object, for the same user is not thread safe. So accordingly, the multiple calls to controller resources are handled sequentially. And, you know, imagine that you have a lot of AJAX controls or several AJAX operations on a page. By default, those would be handled sequentially because the controller believes that it has to safeguard session from one request to another. If it was able to handle the same multiple requests at the exact same time for the same user, the risk that it can't take is that one request is going to do something to session that's going to have a side effect on another request. Well, if there was a way that we could tell the controller, hey, you don't need to worry about session, just don't even worry about it. Well, then, if that's the case, if we could tell a controller that, then it could handle multiple requests concurrently. And that's where the new session state variable comes into place, or new attribute. And we basically can tell a controller that, hey, don't worry about session, not a problem. So with that, I'm going to show you a brief example here of using session and then attempting to do the same thing with a sessionless controller and show you what happens there. Okay, so here we are at our home page again, and I have this section here on sessionless controllers. So I'm going to click this button. I'm going to click this link here to increment a session tally. And you can see it says you called this method one time. I'm going to click the home link here, and it's going to send me back. And you can see now the count is up to one. I'm going to increment it again, and it says, okay, you called this method two times. And then just for good measure, we'll go ahead and do it one more time. And this should then increment to three. I'm flipping over here to Firefox real quick, and you can see that this is truly session, because you can see in this case, I'll just refresh the page here, and you can see that the session here hasn't been incremented. And if I run this, it'll tell me you've called this method one time. And if I come back over to Internet Explorer and I hit refresh here, it's still going to report back with that three. Let's take a look at how this is working over on the controller side. Okay, I'm over in my increment session tally method of my home controller, which is basically calling the session utility, which is just a utility, a common utility to increment a session variable. And for that, I'm passing over. Okay, well, let's see how that code is going to look when we're incrementing and we're dealing with the session object. Over on the home controller, I have two methods. One, they're both string; they both return strings. Increment session tally. Reset session tally. If we look over on our page, we'll see at the bottom that the and I'll go ahead and increment this one more time. You'll see up here home increment session tally, and it's this string which ultimately is getting produced by this method call. I just made this a common utility call just because in our sessionless example, I wanted to show that the same thing is getting injected there. And by that, let's just take a quick spin up to the constructor here. Notice I have a home controller constructor and I have session utility. This is actually getting injected. So we're actually making use of dependency injection here for this utility. And you can see if session utility is null, I'm actually just showing a different way by using the new dependency resolver to get that service. But we'll get to dependency injection in a moment. But let's take a look at session utility. Now, there's not much really going on here other than the fact that we have two methods here, one to increment, and basically I'm handing in HTTP context and context.session. If session tally is null, I'm going to go ahead and set it to zero, and then I'm going to go ahead and cast that value to an integer, and then I'm going to add it. I'm going to add one to it, and then I'm going to set the session value equal to that. And then I have this session or this string that I'm building up. For the resetting of the session tally, I'm actually removing that item from the collection, and then I've set this string as a return value. So you've reset the session tally. So if I go back over to Internet Explorer and I go back home here, and then I go ahead and reset it. You've reset the session tally. That's a string that comes back. No big deal there. That's fairly straightforward stuff that we're doing. But what if we attempt to try to do the same thing through a sessionless controller? Let's still look at the sessionless controller that I have here. And that attribute over on the PowerPoint session state here, I'm basically saying, hey, make your session state behavior disabled. I have an increment session tally method here, just like I do over on the home controller, which does have session state. Same thing. Okay? So let's go back over to our project, and let's go ahead and run that. And I have this method here, try accessing session variable with sessionless controller. Let's see what happens. Now, normally in a presentation, seeing the ketchup and mustard screen like this would be a reason for panic, perhaps. But in this case, it's totally okay because I want this exception to occur. And when you think about it, it makes total sense that we're getting this exception. System null reference exception. Okay, and look, if context session tally equals null, that's the line that we're trying to execute. This is a sessionless controller, so therefore anything that happens within its context, session doesn't exist. Now this gets to be a little bit tricky because we were able to build this application, we're able to save it, we're able to compile it. It's not a problem. So one caveat to keep in mind is that even though your controller may be sessionless, you can still refer to session at design time. This is the kind of thing that you're not going to realize until runtime, because it's not until the controller is instantiated and HTTP context is built up and then it says, oh, well, you have the attribute set to session state disabled. Okay, well, I will bypass putting session into this. And with this, though, when you go down that route, you then get the ability to have concurrent calls, because again, the controller doesn't need to worry about session. So cases where this really becomes important for you, well, high volume sites, or you know, sites where you have a lot of AJAX calls that could be handled concurrently. If you find that things are bogging down a little bit and you're not relying on session, then a sessionless controller may be a very, very good way for you to go. Okay, so continuing on with the new features, we have a number of new HTML helpers: WebGrid, Twitter, Facebook, Webmail. Now, the ones I'm going to demonstrate for you today are the Twitter and WebGrid and charting. There's also a charting helper that I'm going to demonstrate for you as well. Okay, so over on our web page, and I have the Twitter helper here, and I'm actually going to go ahead and pass in an argument to show you that this also accepts some parameters, but you can see that it's operating. And I can say, well, how about Twitter search CodeCamp? Let's see if there's any Twitter messages out there about CodeCamp. And here's CodeCamp now as the default search term. And here we go. So we have some things out there. Let's see how that worked. Unfortunately, a lot of the work is actually taken care of for us. Again, everything that we're doing here is hanging, most of what we're doing here is hanging off the home controller. And I have a Twitter action result here. And you can see that this accepts a string called Twitter search, which you can see in the parameter here that I have set up. But by default, if Twitter search is null, I just defaulted it to MVC conf. And then view bag. A view bag is a new object with the Razor View Engine. And with the advent of the Razor View Engine, what view bag does, it's basically a facade over view data. If you interrogate it, if you start manipulating view bag, if you actually interrogated view data, you would see that elements are getting added and removed and modified as you manipulate them through ViewBag. The difference is that ViewBag, notice that I have a property called .TwitterSearch. It's totally dynamic. It's making use of the new dynamic language capabilities in the CLR. So by dynamically, I created a property, just like I would just do ViewData, square bracket, you know, as a hash, and I would assign the value. The big difference with view bag is that I don't need to cast anything as something. You know, this will happen automatically. So this will know that it's a string, or if it's an object, it would know that as well. The deal is that by putting it in this view bag object and assign the property, my view is going to be able to take advantage of it. In fact, if we look at, since we're in a Twitter action in the home controller, if we look at our views, under home, and again convention over configuration, we have a Twitter view for a Twitter action, and here it is. And now this is the first time in this presentation that we're seeing some Razor syntax, and you can see how much cleaner this is. You know, I have a little at sign with a curly brace, and this is a language. This is a language block. Using C# here. This is obviously a lot cleaner than our ASPX pages from before. Viewbag.title. So this is just called Twitter. Layout. If you're thinking site.master, you're on the right track. We have a shared view and view in the shared folder under views, just like we had before. This here, it's called underscore layout. This is the way the default project is. And this is our default page, and it has our declarations for some JavaScript libraries, CSS, relative layout in terms of where the body is, how our header is going to look. Just like the default project before, it's absolutely no different here. It just happens to be called underscore layout. You can call it whatever you want. It just so happens that in the default project here, that's what it's called. The big thing here is at Microsoft.webhelpers.twitter.search. So this basically, the result of this is some HTML that's going to get dropped into the page. And also that, in conjunction with jQuery and JavaScript, produces this. And it's very interactive, and I can actually I can go ahead and navigate to any one of these, and it would take me there, not a problem. But the key thing is that I really had no code to write to do this other than to make the call to the helper, and it was taken care of for me. So the Twitter helper is one of the nice new helpers that's provided for you in ASP MVC 3. Another one of the helpers that's provided for you is something called the Web Grid. Now, behind the scenes, the Web Grid is really nothing more than an HTML table, but it's a HTML table that has a header to it with header row with each item has a hyperlink, and you see that when I click these items, there's actually sort capability here, and I get that all for free. Let's take a look and see how that works. So here I am back in my home controller, and I have a method, an action result called WebGrid. And this returns a view, and it passes in an object, a new picture. Let's take a look at see what picture has. This is just something that I created for demonstration purposes here. And let's see where we are. Let's Let's okay, so here is the pitcher class, and it's got a first name, last name, type, which is of an enumerated type. And the enumerated type right now is left-handed pitcher, right-handed pitcher, something really simple, and their jersey number. And then there's just a collection hanging off of it, an I list of pitcher, which is called pitchers. And here I just went ahead and just stubbed this data in. So in our controller, I went ahead and I went ahead and nude this one up. If we go back to the home controller, basically new pitcher. So again, convention over configuration, there must be a web grid view, and sure enough there is, and here it is. And what the web grid view is doing is it's specifying its model at model. So there's another demonstration of some Razor view capabilities. MVC3app.models.pitcher. Viewbag.title is web grid. Here's the layout. Now I'm adding some additional code. I'm creating a grid, which is a new web grid. And this is part of the helpers that we get. And I'm basically saying, hey, your data source is model.pitchers. The default sort is number, and the rows per page is 10. And then down in, I have a div here for grid. I just called it that, but at grid.get.html, and here's where all the data is getting thrown into the get.html method. The result of get.html is HTML. And if we go back over to Internet Explorer, and if I right-click on this and view source, here's our table class, grid in the div, grid, table header, table row, table header, first name, table data, all kinds of stuff. So basically, all it is an HTML table that got dynamically created. Now, the one thing you may be asking yourself is, well, okay, that's kind of nice, and the Razor syntax is certainly provides for a cleaner view, but all this code in the view, is this really the way that we want to go? And I would suggest that it's not. I have a second version of WebGrid called WebGrid 2. Look at this one. Still specifying my model, still have the same information up here, but look at this. It just has get grid 2. Now I sort of glossed over the top there. In fact, it's not the same. Instead of at model, it says at inherits. MVC3 app view class is pitcher view class. One of the cool things that we can do in Razor is we can base our views on a view class. Let's take a look at what pitcher view class is. Pitcher view class is based on web view page, which is a generic, and I'm handing in a specification, which is my model, which is pitcher in this case. Now there's going to be some code here that's going to look awfully familiar to you. Here's a method called getGrid, underscore grid equals new WebGrid, and then I'm returning getHTML. So all of this code is encapsulated in a separate class away from my actual view. And the reason why I can just refer to at getGrid here is because it inherits from pitcher view class. So this just becomes a member method. If we go over to Internet Explorer, and instead of home WebGrid, I just do WebGrid 2. You'll see this title change in a moment. Here it is. And oh, looks like I wrote something in there. There's a semicolon. Didn't mean to do that, but in any event, it works. It works exactly the same way. But our code is in a View class, and that's one of the nice features of the Razor View engine. So we can definitely end up getting cleaner code in our views, just on top of the fact that the Razor syntax itself gives us cleaner view code. Now, in a moment, I'm going to talk to you about the other helper called the chart. Called the chart helper, but I'm going to do that in the context of showing you the improved dependency injection support that MVC3 has. Now, the good news is, if you have you've selected one, whether it's Winsor, Structure Map, Unity, Ninject, whatever, it doesn't matter. They all work with this, and this is compliments to the facade pattern. Basically, what the MVC team did is they basically built the facility to wrap the injection of control containers, the IOC containers, inversion of control containers to basically conform to a common interface. That way, other aspects of the MVC framework could just deal with something called iDependency Resolver. And behind the scenes, the specifics of your IOC container will come through. Now, in this example, I have an implementation of Structure Map. Now, I also have an implementation of Unity. But for purposes, for the time that we have today, I'm just going to show you Structure Map. But the code examples that you'll download will also have Unity, so you can easily flip between them. So let's take a look at how the chart view works from the outside looking in, and then we'll delve into the detail. Okay, so here is the index page of our chart controller, and you can see it's got this pie chart. By the way, for these examples, I have to give a big shout out to Malcolm Sheridan, a friend of mine, a fellow MVP down in Melbourne, Australia, who on his blog had a lot of these examples. They were really nice, concise examples, both for the pie charts and the bar charts. And I basically lifted them. I sent him a quick email and I said, "Hey, Malcolm, is that cool?" He's like, "Oh yeah, absolutely." I said, "Yeah, well, I'll give you credit for it." So in any event, here we have this pie chart, and it's on our view page. And the question is, well, how exactly do we get here? Well, let's take a look, since it's the chart view, let's take a look at a chart controller, because that's where everything begins. Okay, so here we are in the chart controller, and you can see that in the constructor, an instance of iChart is getting injected in, and it's getting stored to a private variable. And then in our get chart, in our index method, our index action, we're just returning view. So the next thing we need to do is we need to look at the index view of the chart controller, which is going to be right here under views, under chart. Here's the index view. Seen this code before up at the top, but notice image source / chart controller / get chart action. Let's take a look at the get chart controller again for get chart. Here's the controller action get chart under the chart controller. And look what it's doing. _ chart render, which is a service that's being provided by something that we injected into this controller. Let's take a look at iChart. And we'll go to the implementation of that in a moment. So the interface for iChart is pretty simple. Just has one method. It's a void. Doesn't return anything. Render. Let's take a look at what implements iChart. Okay, so here's our class WebChart, which implements iChart, and there's a constructor. And this constructor is taking an integer for width, an integer for height, and a string for type. And internally, we have a chart that is being built up. So underscore chart equals new chart. And we're carrying forward the width and the height and the type. And just have some data in here. And then the render method invokes the write method of chart. So chart, as you can see, look at the namespace, system.web.helper. So this is just a helper that we get. So the big question is how in the world did all this get wired up in the first place? Well, to answer that question, we need to run over to the global ASAX file, and this is all stock in here. Exactly, if you created a default ASP.MVC 3 project, you would see all this. But there is an extra line of code in here called structure map container setup setup. So let's go over to structure map container setup. So I have this class called structure map container setup, which has a static method in here called setup. And it's calling dependency resolver, which is a service that the MVC3 framework provides. And it gives us the ability to set a resolver. So we can provide any kind of IOC resolver that we want. And the only requirement is that the resolver, and in this case, it's going to be something called structure map dependency resolver. It has to conform to I dependency resolver because that's what set resolver accepts. And in this case, we're saying a new structure map dependency resolver, which is the class down here. And this itself contains a constructor argument for container. And the new container is basically going to have some information that's a result of our structure map registry. So here's our structure map registry, and here's where we're bootstrapping everything up. And ultimately, this is where we're getting to the resolution. When iChart is requested, provide web chart with constructor argument height equal to app setting, width equal to app setting, type equal to app setting. You may not do very much of this, but it's actually a nice way to give flexibility to your applications. And in your web config, there's a place where we have app settings stored. And in this case, I have an app setting for chart width, chart height, chart type. Now, this is the project that I have. This is my source code, and you know, by default I have it at 256, 256, and the type of chart is Pi. However, when I'm running these examples for you, I actually have a website that I'm running on my local machine. It's the full-blown IIS server instance. And I do that because I want to make sure that I'm actually running a real website. And Cassini's good for development purposes, but at times it can obscure some of the more nitty-gritty issues that you have to deal with, for example, things like security, so on and so forth, things that you might be able to get away with Cassini, you cannot get away with IIS. Now, IIS Express 7.5 is out. I have to admit, I haven't played with it yet, so I don't know terms of parity where it is with full-blown IIS. If it is right there every step of the way, then I certainly would use that for development purposes and demonstration purposes. But nevertheless, under my inetpub www.root folder, I have a folder called mvcconf, and here I have a file called webconfig. I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to open it with Notepad. And what I'm going to do here is under App Settings, I'm going to change it to 400, and instead of pi, I'm going to make it bar. I'm going to go ahead and save this web config, and then I'm going to go back over to Internet Explorer, and I'm going to click refresh, and we should see this thing change to a bigger bar chart. Okay, so here's our bigger bar chart, 400 by 400. Again, you know, it shows that our inversion of control container is wiring everything up for us, and we're using application settings. If you've never done that before, it's a great way to add some flexibility to your applications. If you embed that type of information within your application, then you may have to go through your build process, build out your, recompile your application, and redeploy it. If you just have to tweak your web config, hey, go for it. Of course, you're opening it up with a text editor, so you need to be very, very careful about what it is that you're doing there. That's an example of how structure map as a dependency injection manager can be integrated into MVC3. Now, looking a bit closer at our implementation of iDependency Resolver, it's this get service method that becomes very, very important. And if we go back to the home controller here, where I just had this code sitting up here in its constructor, if the session utility was null, session utility equals dependency resolver dot current dot get service. Well, ultimately, because in our global ASAX, we're calling the setup to set the resolver as this specific container, we're ultimately calling this method. Now, I also happen to have a version of this for Unity. And I have a Unity dependency resolver, which conforms to iDependency Resolver. And it has a version of get service, and this is just a little bit different. So, you know, each of these IOC containers operate a little bit differently, but it doesn't matter because you're wrapping everything inside of an implementation to iDependency Resolver. So from MVC's perspective, it doesn't care because this is information hiding. This is true encapsulation. It doesn't care. And you can see some similarities here. We're wiring up the Unity container in a very similar way. Syntactically, a little bit different, but basically the same thing. So if you're using, you know, a particular IOC container, there's no reason why you can't make use of these new features inside of MVC3. Now, what the good thing is, you know, again, going back over the home controller, something, a line of code like this assumes no particular implementation of an IOC container. So if you ever have to swap yours out, you're dealing with a level of abstraction that doesn't consider a particular implementation of an IOC container. Now, that itself is a really good practice, and that is something that you may want to look very, very closely at in other aspects of your development. So when it comes to patterns and practices and things like that, there are several things that are new, newly implemented in MVC3 that are just generally very, very good practices to follow. The last thing that I wanted to talk to you about today was remote validation. And if you have any experience with jQuery and JavaScript, you know it's not too difficult to actually have to wire up using jQuery to tap into events to tie certain things to certain pieces of code to events surrounding your text boxes and button clicks and things like that. You know, we have there's mouse, you know, mouse move and blur, so that when we're interacting with a text box, it's fairly simple to attach JavaScript to it, but it can be rather tedious. And if you have to do enough of it, code management becomes a bit of an issue. So what I'm about to show you is itself something technically was capable in other versions of ASP MVC. However, the team at Microsoft decided to handle a lot of the plumbing for us and really put the O in unobtrusiveness for JavaScript and Ajax here. So I just have a very simple form here for person, and I'm just going to say John Peterson, and I'm just going to go ahead and click this button. And this doesn't really do anything other than it just allows me to invoke a form post. And in fact, if I go over to the, if you look at this person here, it says person, so it's a person controller that I'm dealing with. If I go over to my person controller, I have an index page, and I'm just varring up a new person, and I'm basically just using temp data to kind of keep state on this person, since I don't have a database that I'm working with, and I'm returning a view with using person as my model. Let's take a look at person. Person just has a first name and last name, but notice that I'm using some data annotations here. Both are required, but this one for first name has a remote attribute to it. Now, the first parameter is the controller action, which in this case is no spaces. The second parameter is the controller, which in this case is person. And then I also have an error message that I can provide. Error message equals first name cannot have spaces. Yes, this is a stupid rule, but that's the way the business analyst wants it. So let's take a look at our person controller and no spaces. No spaces except, say, person, and it's returning JSON, and it's returning basically a JSON representation of a Boolean. Person.firstname.split, if the length is equal to 1, that means if I have no spaces in my first name, that's true. And JSON_request_behavior.allow_get. This is very, very important. In version 2, the default behavior for JSON requests was a post. If you didn't initiate a JSON request with a post, you were going to get an error. Here, we're basically, these types of calls are gets. We're not posting back. We're just doing gets. Therefore, we're allowing gets in this case. So how does all this work? Well, if we go back to our page, and this time I'm just going to go ahead and just put a space in here and check it out. First name cannot have spaces. This is a stupid rule, but that's the way the business analyst wants it. The cool thing here is that there was no form post. And if I try to post this back, it's not going to let me do it. And my other required parameter is still going to kick in here. So if I go ahead and it's going to tell me the first name field is required. So all that is still going to work. It's going to work for the last name as well. So basically, through those data annotations and through having some values set up in our web config, which again, if we go to app settings, client validation enabled is true, unobtrusive JavaScript enabled is true, we're really good to go. But you also have to make sure in your page or in your layout, your master page, you need to make sure that you also have referenced jQuery, jQuery.validate, jQuery.validate.unobtrusive. The min just means these are the minified versions with all the carriage returns and white spaces taken out. if you saw, remember seeing from Firefox all the gets that are occurring, each individual file is getting resourced, so you want to try and minimize that as much as possible, and the minified files are considerably smaller than the human readable ones. But the deal is that with this is what's meant by unobtrusive JavaScript in AJAX, because behind the scenes, the way this remote validation works is through those means. And this is a really good thing to have, because what you're able to do is more easily provide your users with an experience that they were used to and accustomed to with a Windows form, but with the flexibility of a web implementation. And now they can type something in, and when they navigate to the next field, they can get immediate feedback to tell them, yeah, this looks okay. And if it's not okay, they're immediately told right off the bat. What's nice about this is you don't have to fill everything in and click a button to submit to post everything back, and then only to have to bring things back to the browser because there was something that they didn't do that was quite right. This ends up making for a lot more efficient work. So in conclusion, you know, many of the new features in MVC3 were possible before, but you had to wire up a lot of things yourselves. And a good example of that was the remote validation. But looking at the sessionless controllers, you know, this was not possible before. But in high volume sites, by using the session behavior attribute, you can perhaps give yourself a real nice performance boost. Especially in cases where you're not dealing with session and you don't need to deal with session. The SEO improvements are really nice, because now you can let crawlers and indexers know when resources have been redirected permanently. The improved dependency injection capabilities will make it easier to swap out an inversion of control container. The new HTML helpers make it easier to add some slick features to your site. The Razor View engine provides a much cleaner experience, and also the ability to create view classes from an architectural standpoint is much nicer. If anything, they sort of provide that ease of code behind, but architecturally much better in the MVC paradigm. In summary, I think ASP MVC3 is a compelling upgrade and something you definitely want to strongly consider. So thanks for attending MVC Conf 2. If you have any questions, my name again is John Peterson. This is my email address, Twitter, and blog account. Again, if you have any questions, don't hesitate to ask me. Have a great conference, and we will be seeing you around. Take care.